Well, folks, thanks. I think someone was saying to me the other day, you know, the only measure of whether or not you're really an important guy is you call cabinet meetings and they show up. And but that's because I know it's because of the president. I tell everybody, but my chief of staff used to tell staff in the Senate, all the power of vice president is reflective. We're going to have the president here in a minute. But let me begin by thanking you all. You know, this is the 12th meeting that the Middle Class Task Force has had, and the president's going to be joining us very shortly. But the purpose of the task force, right from the beginning, as all of you know, not only intellectually but in your gut, has been to make sure that this administration never lose sight of the fact that the folks that got us where we are, the middle-class Americans, are out there breaking their neck, and a lot of them in real trouble as a consequence of through no fault of their own. But the truth is, the middle class has been lagging behind long before we took office, and not just the 8 years of the Bush administration. They've been together, as the old saying goes, further and further behind. And so the spirit of today's meeting is to highlight the number of policies that target easing this middle-class squeeze we've all talked about for so long. And I want to thank everyone in this room for working so hard with this task force to move these ideas that you've had. You know, it's interesting, people, I've heard people say, well, you know, you're focusing on the middle-class task force. Well, the truth is, the first major announcement the president made the second day in office was establish this task force. And very shortly thereafter, we all met, and I asked each of you to go back and scrub your departments. Go through everything in each of your departments and find out what within the department could be done to strengthen the middle class that may have been overlooked, or what we should we initiate, how can we make it work better. And you've done just that. We'll all have a lot more to say about the new initiatives that you've all come up with in the next hour or so, but I'd like to get started by turning this over. And I know we're going to have a brief time now before the president comes. He's running a little bit late, so we may have a little more time to discuss some of this internally here. But Gary, I'd like to talk about you. Your report, Middle Class in America, is a nice piece of work. And I wonder whether you'd begin by telling us about, as you've gone back and scrubbed it, what you found and what you think we should be doing.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. I'd like to begin the discussion by just sharing some very fascinating new research from the Commerce Department's Economics and Statistics Administration. We've just put out a report for your task force entitled Middle Class in America, put together by Becky Blank, our Undersecretary for Economic Affairs, and her team, and some of them are in the room with us today, and I want to thank them for their great, great work. The key conclusions are fairly stark. Americans are finding it increasingly difficult to attain middle-class status, and if they do, they're finding it harder and harder to stay there. Take, for example, two portraits of a typical American family, a two-parent, two-children household, one portrait taken in 1990, the other taken in 2008. The median income of the typical two-parent, two-child family was just over $80,000 in 2008. After adjusting for inflation, that's a 20% real increase over the median income of those families in 1990, a 20% increase. But almost all of that income gain came between 1990 and the year 2000. In the last decade, these families have seen their wages actually stagnate or decline. And that remains true even if you stopped measuring in 2007, even before the recession. So this stagnation or decline occurred even before the recession of the last 2 years. Moreover, these gains that the typical family saw were largely derived from women in the households working more hours. So the women in these typical two-parent families are now working almost 5 weeks more per year than they were in the year 1990. And that's really the reason for that gain. While American families have been working more for less, the cost of key components of middle-class life have skyrocketed, far outpacing their income. Even when you account for inflation, since 1990, families have seen their housing prices rise by 56%. Healthcare insurance premiums and out-of-pocket expenses have risen 155%. That's more than doubled. And the price of a four-year public college education has risen by some 60%. So all of these factors have conspired to make middle-class living a tenuous proposition. And American families, even if they don't know the exact numbers, they feel it. They know it. You've said it. It's harder to reach the goals their parents had, harder to get by, and harder still to get ahead. And so this report brings into sharp relief the why of so much of what this administration has been trying to tackle since taking office in January, whether it's fighting for health care, health insurance reform, expanding credit for small businesses, or taking on the unfair practices of the credit card industry. You and the president and the president's team have done a lot of great work, but so much more remains to be done. And I'm confident that the steps that have been taken so far and the measures that will be announced later today by you and the president will further the progress still and help preserve the dream of the middle class, the American dream, for generations to come.
Thanks, Gary. One of the things that I think was so important for us to do was establish the factual basis for our assertions that we've been making, what the middle class families were feeling. And it's quite clear. I know the economists have known it, but the truth of the matter is we've not had, the last administration didn't speak to it, and our job is not only speak to it, but fix it. But Secretary Sebelius.
Mr. Vice President, again, thank you for not only convening us all on a regular basis, but for the focus on the challenges facing families across America. And I just wanted to highlight a couple of areas where the Department of Health and Human Services is hopefully helping families deal with those challenges that you have in the workforce. Elder care and child care are critical family issues, and we're seeing that squeeze happen more and more. I want to recognize, Mr. Vice President, that we have one of our terrific new agency leaders, Kathy Greenlee, who's our Assistant Secretary on Aging, who is here today, and she's going to be helping in this area. But just a little data point, 80% of the long-term care services and support right now provided across America are delivered by family members, friends, and neighbors. That's good news because for the most part it means that folks are able to work with their loved ones and means that people who know elders best are providing that care. But it also translates into often an enormous strain on caregivers, especially middle-class families who are making too much income to qualify for help from Medicaid and often don't have the financial resources to pay for expensive out-of-pocket care. So they're really caught. So we have a range of caregiver services from counseling and training to transportation assistance, helping to get to doctor's appointments in the grocery store, in-home aids that help people stay in their own homes for meals and bathing, respite care, providing caregivers with much-needed breaks. And while that doesn't sound like much, it's kind of the wraparound care to help people age in place.
Oh, anybody who's done it, it's a lot.
You bet. So I think that service and, you know, the announcements to come will be enormously helpful to a lot of families who are struggling to provide that care, and I know you know that very well. Another area that we see the real pinch on middle-class families in the workforce is with child care services. Most families with children under five are in the workforce, and their effectiveness on the job is often directly impacted by their child care arrangements. Huge problem is that child care, especially high quality child care, which is critical for kids to be school ready and ready to learn, is very expensive. In fact, it's not uncommon for families with two or more children to spend more on child care than they do on their housing. And again, it's a huge step. We are already taking action to reduce the burden. Part of the Recovery Act, new resources were provided to the Child Care and Development Fund, which helps low-income working families get high-quality care. We have a dependent care and child tax credit targeted at middle-class families. And the goal of both of these, and hopefully again with the work moving forward, is to not have working families have to choose about whether they're going to put away funds for their child to go to college or whether they're going to have a high quality early education, which might be the key to college in the first place, going on right now. You know, as a working mom who's been in the workforce the whole time my children were growing up and the daughter of an 88-year-old father, I'm very sensitive to both of these issues and struggles, as I know most around the table are. And I think help and assistance in these two areas is something that really does take a huge strain off families who are trying to be good parents and good workers at the same time, but often caught in the squeeze.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Secretary Duncan.
Vice President, you know so well, going to college has never been more important. It's never been more expensive, and families haven't been under this much financial pressure and duress in a long, long time. So fighting to make college much more accessible and affordable is hugely important. The first thing we tried to do in working with Secretary Geithner and his team in the IRS was actually simplify the form for getting into college. And believe it or not, the form itself was a total impediment, a total barrier to college access.
I have no idea how much I have heard
about the simplification. It's already, people are already getting it, including my daughter, who's filling out a last piece of the...
It was a huge step in the right direction. It's all online, much better skip logic. The issue was you basically needed a PhD to fill the form out. And when you're 17, you don't quite have your PhD yet. So. Folks have worked really hard.
It's hard to fill.
And we're going to keep coming back year after year and continue to improve there, but I think people really are sensing it's much less scary than it was in the past. Secondly, trying to make college much more affordable, and thanks to your leadership and the President's leadership, through the Recovery Act with the American Opportunity Tax Credit, that provided up to $2,500 in relief for 8 million families this past year. Pell Grants went up $800. Over FY08, impacting more than 6 million families. An additional 10 million families had access to federal loans. So it's been huge progress just in the past year. But we're trying to take that next step and go even further. And there's a bill, H.R. 3221, that passed the House, it's before the Senate, that would basically move $80 billion that's currently subsidizing banks and instead start to invest in children and in college students. And we think this is the right thing to do. We're have the vast majority of the risk on these college loans anyway, and if we're able to move to direct lending, that'd bring an additional $40 billion in for Pell Grants, and we could keep raising those amounts each year. We could dramatically expand Perkins loans and make them more affordable. And it would bring an additional $12 billion into community colleges. And you and your wife know very well how critically important this is, with green jobs, healthcare jobs, tech jobs. As families start to get back on their feet, I think community colleges are going to play a huge, huge role, and that's going to help the country and the economy get back on its feet. So tremendous progress already, a chance to take another big step. And then finally, thinking about how you pay these loans back after graduation. And what is already law that passed July 1st that we want to much better publicize is what's called income-based repayment, IBR. And this does two things that are important. One, it caps loan repayments today at 15% of income. But very significantly for me, if you go into the public service after graduation for 10 years, all your loans will be forgiven. And all too often historically, there are lots of folks who wanted to teach or wanted to work in the public sector, work in a healthcare clinic or work in a legal clinic, but they couldn't afford it. Their loans has handicapped them, and you know, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 of loans, they couldn't follow their heart, they couldn't follow their passion. And now we can get that next generation of great talent to come into education, to come into the public sector, and if they stay with it for 10 years, all those loans will be forgiven. We're gonna need about 1 million new teachers in this country over the next 4, 6, 7 years. And through income-based repayment, I'm convinced we're gonna get not just the numbers, but a much higher caliber of talent coming in. So it's been a huge step in the right direction.
I think it's really exciting. And it's, like you said, most American public hadn't quite sunk in yet. With for not a whole lot of money, relatively speaking, we've been able to do a whole heck of a lot to change the calculus and hopefully change everything from the education system to productivity. But, speaking of the guy with all the money and how it works, Secretary Geithner.
Mr. Vice President, your task force is announcing two initiatives today that will help improve retirement security. You know, the most important thing you can do for retirement security is give Americans the confidence they're going to have a job that's going to allow them to earn a living and have income rise steadily over time. This crisis did a huge amount of damage to people's basic confidence in their job security, and it caused enormous damage to the basic value of people's savings, their retirement savings, the value of their house. And we need to help them start to rebuild that financial cushion. The two proposals here that matter in this case are a proposal to extend automatic IRAs to Americans. So we will, if this passes, we will enroll Americans in a savings tax advantage savings vehicle IRA, give them the chance to opt out if they like. But the research shows that if you are enrolled automatically, savings do rise significantly. People participate much more. But we're also going to propose to expand and make refundable, improve the advantages of a savers tax credit. That will have the government effectively match contributions for a lot of Americans to their savings plans. And these things are good policy. They make sense. They're likely to have a reasonably high return at reasonable cost to the government. Now, we're going through an enormously important transition as an economy now. You know, we had a long period where we borrowed too much, we saved too little. The government did this, and the average American family did this. And for us to build a foundation for a more investment-driven, innovation-driven, export-driven economy, which is our future, we need to have savings rise in the United States. And you want to see the average American start to save more. That's already happening. It's a very important step already. In just a very brief period of time, you see Americans starting to save a modest share of income again. And that shows that we're making some progress healing the damage caused by this crisis. Again, most important thing we can do on retirement security is make sure people have the chance to work and earn a decent living, have wages go up over time. And I know that's what you and the President are so committed to.
Well, thank you, Mr. Secretary. Look, what you've all hit upon is if you ask that middle-class family that Gary talked about, that $80,000, two children, husband and wife, you ask them what will most affect their standard of living, their life. They don't think of it in terms of a specific payment or anything like that. They think of it in terms of the things you've mentioned. They think of it in terms of child care. They think of it in terms of helping them take care of their parents. They think of it in terms of whether or not they're going to be able to save, whether there's any mechanism for that. They think of it in terms of they can be able to send their kids to college. They think of it in terms of whether or not they're going to be able to deal with, as you pointed out, Gary, the increase in housing, the increase in college tuition, health care. And so what the President, when he set this task force up, asked us to do is figure out how we can take these component pieces, which there's a lot more we're doing, but when people think about it, and you ask someone about their quality of life, it usually starts off with whether or not, they live in a safe neighborhood, and whether or not they have a shot to send their kid to school, whether or not they're going to get some help with their parents, that they're taken care of. I mean, you mentioned, Kathleen, quote, what sounded like to most people, and I don't think it does, little things. They're big deal things if you're able to just be able to get some respite for a husband and wife both working to get a little bit of help with getting their elderly parent to the doctor when they can't. I mean, these all really impact on basically what we're talking about is when we think about when I know because I've talked to each of you individually, we're all on the same page. When the President talks about middle class task force, it really is about not a number, but their quality of life. I mean, do they feel like they're doing okay? Do they feel like they got a little sense of they can breathe? They can, they have a little sense of it's not just, both of us working 50 hours a week just to stay put. And so I think these things are going to make a big difference. as we kick them into gear. But the president is on his way over. But before he gets here, if we have a little bit of time, I don't know whether Melanie or Christy or anyone who hadn't spoken yet would like to make any comment about what we're doing. And what
I'll just say a little bit. One, like Gary's group, we've been writing the economic report of the president. And one of the wonderful things about that is it's a chance to bring together sort of both the facts about what's going on and the whole range of policies we've either already put into place or are proposing. And I think one of our themes has very much been yours of all of the things that this administration has tried to do are fundamentally to improve standards of living for the American people, for the middle class. And I just want to come back and reemphasize Tim's point of how important jobs are to all of this, that you know, the number one thing that a middle class family wants to know is do they have a job, a paycheck, so that they can support their families. And you know, the work that you have done in implementing the Recovery Act, the work that Tim's done with the Financial Stability Plan, absolutely essential to trying to turn this around and get people back into jobs. And certainly one of the things we'll be talking about in the report, and I know we're all talking about a lot, is what more do we do? But that is, I think, going to be a central issue going forward.
One of the things you and I talked about in the first month was it's an interesting phenomenon. The American people want us to care about the destitute, the poor, the people who are really left out there and really need help. But sometimes they think that's all we focus on. You know, sometimes there's a sense out there that we're not looking at, especially in a time of this great recession, where these folks who thought they were pretty well situated find themselves just sort of hanging on by their fingernails. And I think that this is just pure Biden. My view all along has been to the degree to which the middle class feels, and we're talking about middle class people who, when I was growing up, it would have sounded like a whole lot of money, a whole lot, $80,000. I never knew anybody who, you know, any family that made $80,000. But in today's society, to live in the same neighborhood I lived in when I was a kid, my dad was making $12,000, and I know I'm an old guy, but you know, you got to make $80,000, and even then you're further behind than I think my dad was. But the point is here, I really think for the things that make, I'm just speaking, this is pure me, what makes me a Democrat, the people I really am most worried about is those people who are living in destitute circumstances, those people who are in desperate shape. The degree to which we're able to get a general national consensus to deal with their problems depends upon securing the middle class. Because it's not going to come from the very wealthy. They're good folks. I don't mean wealthy folks are good folks. Unless you get a consensus of the middle class that these things are worth doing and able to be done and need to be done, we have an obligation to do them, then none of the programs work for it. Pell Grants don't hang around a long time. Unless you make sure those folks making 80 grand or 100 grand with two kids are able to send their kid to school too. And so that's why I think this is really important. But Melanie, as an old joke goes, you forgot more about this stuff than most of us know because your years in the Senate and here. Do you have any comment you'd like to make?
Sure. One of the things, I guess a couple of things I'll say. One of the great pleasures I had working on the campaign and in this job has been traveling around the country and talking to people and communities around the country. And I think it's probably one of the things that we all enjoy about the work that we do. And everywhere I go, I often start out by asking people about the American dream. And without fail, almost every hand, or virtually every hand in the room will go up. People believe in it. But what they need is to work with us not only to address the ways in which they're hurting, but also to think aspirationally about the ways in which they can succeed and help their children to succeed. And I believe, and I've had, it's been such a pleasure to work with every person sitting at this table, and the work that you're doing at your agencies to try and put that plan into place and to make it operational. I know the work that Hilda and I have been able to do in conjunction with everybody here around job training, and certainly the work that Arnie described around education, not only making college affordable for those families and making it accessible for families and their kids, but also starting at the very beginning and thinking about ways that we get our kids at the start on the right track. And certainly with regard to healthcare and the work we're doing around food safety and thinking about how to give parents the tools so that they can get access to the best and most affordable foods for their children. So I think the work that we're doing is putting us on the right path, and I want to thank you for bringing us together and giving us the opportunity to blend all that work and talk with one voice to the American people and to the middle class community and those who aspire to be in the middle class about what we're doing so that they can understand it very holistically and what we're doing for their families.
Look, the thing I'm so appreciative of with everybody here is no one had to be converted to why this was so important, number one. Seriously, I've been around the Senate and this town a long time. What happens with administrations is they come into office, and I don't think any was more challenged than ours with serious problems that they inherit. And I don't think any president's ever had his plate as full as this president in terms of both foreign policy, economic policy, the state of the nation, the attitude of the nation. And the tendency is to make sure you have to deal with the immediate crisis. But what you all have done is we all made a deal that when you get up in the morning, physically speaking, while all this is going on, when you're dealing on what's happening with, you know, whether the banks are going under, whether or not we're going to be able to meet our debt, whether all these things, that you got somebody in your shop at a high level saying, let's not take our eye off the ball of why we're doing this job in the first place. It sounds silly, but I promise you, having been here for 8 presidents, it is an instinctive response. Just take care of what's in front and not go back and look at the reason we ran. The president's almost here, but I can recall him telling me when we talked about my joining this team, which I was honored to do, is that the phrase we used to use in the campaign trail was that even if we grow the economy at 8% a year, the growth of GDP is 8%, it's not going to be viewed as a success unless middle-class people are put back in a position where they are reaping the benefits of the productivity that they produce. And so, again, thanks for keeping your eye on the ball. I know you've been doing a lot at agriculture, maybe Mr. Secretary at Labor, and we've been driving OMB crazy with all our ideas here. But I think what the president's going to be about to announce and what we're going to be talking about, he is going to be talking about in the State of the Union. This is an interesting note. The president is here, which means that, guys, I'm going to go meet the president. We're going to come back out, and the president's going to have an opportunity to speak. But again, thanks. Thanks. We got to keep at it.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
All right. Hey, folks. A year ago, when President Obama established the Middle Class Task Force and asked me to chair it, and I might add, we were only in office, I think, 2 days, Melody, when he set up this Middle Class Task Force. Because as we campaigned around the country, he made it clear that we were going to be sure that as we grew this economy, the middle class was not left behind as they had been the previous 10 to 12 years. And as we move from recession to recovery, our focus is the middle class. Today, living a quality middle class life starts, as it always has, with a good-paying job. And by job, we're not talking about merely a paycheck. It's more than a paycheck. And we're talking about dignity. We're talking about security. We're talking about knowing your pension is safe, your health insurance is reliable, your elderly parents and your children are going to be cared for, your neighborhood is safe, but there's decent schools, and that your kids are going to be able to grow up and if they desire and you desire, be able to attend college. It's the old-fashioned notion of American dream. I mean, sounds corny, but that's literally what it is. And the president and you and I have long believed that you can't have a strong America without a growing middle class. It's that simple. It's that basic. And right now, the middle class is nowhere near as strong as it needs to be. So next month, the Middle Class Task Force is going to deliver its final report, not final, its year-end report to the president. And this afternoon, we're spotlighting some of the items in that report that the president is going to be including in the upcoming budget. And these include, first of all, an expansion of the child care tax credit. Since 2000, child care costs have grown significantly faster than inflation and twice as fast as the median income of families with children. And that's why we're asking Congress to nearly double the credit for middle-class families with incomes up to $85,000 and increase the credit for nearly every family making under $115,000. Secondly, the president is going to be proposing an increase in funding for child care and the so-called Child Care and Development Fund to serve an additional 235,000 children in America. This is going to help working parents who are struggling to lift their families into the middle class. And thirdly, elder care. I mean, we all, you know, we're a generation, the so-called baby boom generation, is becoming very knowledgeable about elder care. The need to help middle-class families who are caring for aging parents and relatives. People like Jill and me are part of what's called that sandwich generation, and I make a very good salary. But just going through caring for my mother the last year and a half, and before that my father, who thank God lived to ripe old ages, it's not easy. And we sit there when my brothers and sisters and I divided up the cost of the care. We were able to do that, no complaints, not a problem. But I thought to myself, my Lord, what would it be like? A couple making with two kids making $85,000 a year, even $125,000 a year. How do they do it? So today we're proposing more support for caregivers by providing counseling, training, help with transportation, and temporary respite care when they just need a break or they have to work, which most all of them do. This is going to allow nearly 200,000 people who are now balancing work and providing care to an elderly relative to be served. And 3 million hours of respite care are going to be provided. The fourth thing is we're going to be strengthening the income-based repayment program for student loans. Fancy way of saying, a lot of kids and families graduate with significant loan responsibility and literally are left with very few options. They've got to go out and get the highest paying job they can, maybe in an area they had no intention of working in, just to pay back the loan. Today, the average debt of a graduating senior from college, now listen, the average debt, people of my generation, the average debt is $23,000. That is literally $2,000 more than my first house cost. But in any standard, it's a lot of money. Average debt. Some are graduating with a great deal more debt than that. So our proposal ensures that federal student loan payments for overburdened borrowers are never more than 10% of their income. A change like that makes a real difference for a kid just out of school, for someone who earns $30,000 and owes $20,000 in loans. This would lower his or her monthly payment from $228 a month under the standard repayment plan to $115 a month. People who have to, you know, budget every day just to get by, they understand that's a big difference. That's a big difference. And finally, we want to strengthen retirement security, which we talked about with the Secretary of Treasury, for American workers. Too many working people in this country don't have a good option to save their hard-earned money for retirement. And too many of those who do save are finding that at the end of the day, they don't have enough saved to afford the basic retirement they deserve. That's why we're proposing to give more workers better access to retirement plans at work, to match retirement savings for middle-class Americans so they can save more, and to strengthen and update the 401k regulations so that they can save with greater confidence. This means establishing an automatic individual retirement account. Today, 78 million Americans, working Americans, roughly half the workforce, don't have employer-based retirement plans anymore. Our proposal lays the groundwork for an employer who do not currently offer retirement plans to enroll their employees in direct deposit IRAs. we found it's a simple proposition. When you do that, people, if you're automatically enrolled, you can opt out. But they save a great deal more. And it just puts in place the requirement of the employer to provide that access out of their paycheck to go into an IRA. It's a simple proposition, but it's a big deal. It also means simplifying and expanding the savers credit, which helps working families save for retirement by providing a 50% match on the first $1,000 of retirement savings. So if you put $1,000 into a retirement account, your government's going to add even more, another $500. It's an incentive, but long-term it saves the government a lot more money than the $500 put in if, in fact, we find we have a generation that's able to care for themselves and not have to look to the government to provide some basic needs they need. This will not only help build up a nest egg for existing savers, but it's going to encourage workers who currently have no retirement accounts to start to save. Taking together these and other middle-class proposals, we believe will go a long way toward easing the strain on working families, allowing them to save more today to get further ahead tomorrow. Because if we give a working man or woman in this country, and first of all, we got to make sure they've got good jobs, if we give them an opportunity, they're the most productive workers in the world. We give them the tools, the flexibility, even just a chance to succeed. We're not only going to rebuild this economy, we're going to offer millions of Americans an opportunity to build a future that they hope and still believe is available to them. So I want to thank all you guys. You've been meeting with me on a regular basis. I've been a little bit of a pain in the neck. I know you have urgent things that were placed on our plate when we took office. And one of the things you've done, and I thank you for it, when the President set up this task force, is you have not taken your eye off the ball. You have a serious people inside each of your agencies doing nothing every day but getting up, putting both feet in the floor and saying, what are we going to do inside my shop that's going to ease the burden and increase the opportunity for people to get into the middle class and stay in? So, Mr. President, I think the President is here. I'd like to invite him to come out because we owe the President a great deal for focusing this issue throughout the campaign and the first thing you did when you came to office. Mr. President, it's an honor working with you on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to
Hey, guys, everybody have a seat. Well, I wanted to stop by to comment on all the great work that the Middle Class Task Force is doing. And you've just seen why Joe is the right person to do it. No one brings to the table the same combination of personal experience and substantive expertise. He's come a long way and achieved incredible things along the ride, but he's never forgotten where he came from and his roots as a working class kid from Scranton. He's devoted his life to making the American dream a reality for everyone because he's lived it. Now, we all know what that American dream is. It's the idea that in America, we can make of our lives what we will. It's the idea that if you work hard and live up to your responsibilities, you can get ahead and enjoy some of the basic guarantees in life. A good job that pays a good wage, health care that will be there when you get sick, a secure retirement, even if you're not rich, an education that will give our kids a better life than we had. They're very simple ideas, but they're the ideas that are at the heart of our middle class. The middle class that made the 20th century the American century. Unfortunately, the middle class has been under assault for a long time. Too many Americans have known their own painful recessions long before any economist declared that there was a recession. We've just come through what was one of the most difficult decades the middle class has ever faced. A decade in which median income fell and our economy lost about as many jobs as it gained. For 2 years, Joe and I traveled this country, and we heard stories that are all too familiar. Stories of Americans barely able to stay afloat despite working harder and harder for less, premiums that were doubling, tuition fees that were rising almost as fast, savings being used up, retirements put off, dreams put on hold. That was all before the middle class got pounded by the full fury of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Their stories are why Joe and I ran for this office. to reverse those trends, to fight for the middle class, to make sure working families have a voice in the White House, and to do everything within our power to make sure they don't just survive the crisis, but again, they can thrive. When we walked through these doors last year, our first and most urgent task was to rescue our economy, to give immediate relief to those who were hurt by its downturn, but also to rebuild it on a new, stronger foundation for job creation. So we helped state and local governments keep cops and firefighters and teachers on the job, helping to plug their budgets. We invested in areas with the most potential for job growth, both immediate and lasting, in our infrastructure, in science and technology, in education, in clean energy. And these steps have saved or created about 2 million jobs so far. But more than 7 million have been lost as a consequence of this recession, an epidemic that demands our relentless and sustained response. Now, last month, the House passed a new jobs bill. The Senate, as we speak, is hard at work developing its own job creation package. Creating good, sustainable jobs is the single most important thing we can do to rebuild the middle class, and I won't rest until we're doing just that. But we also need to reverse the overall erosion in middle class security so that when this economy does come back, working Americans are free to pursue their dreams again. There are a variety of immediate steps we can take to do just that, steps we're poised to begin taking in the budget that I'll put forward next week. Joe already spoke about some of these proposals in detail, proposals that make it a bit easier for families to get by, for students to get ahead, and for workers to retire. To make balancing work and family more realistic, we'll make it easier to care for children and aging loved ones. To make college more affordable, we'll make it easier for students to pay back their loans and forgive their debt earlier if they choose a career in public service. And to make retirement more secure, we're going to make it easier to save through the workplace. Joe and I are going to keep on fighting for what matters to middle-class families, an education that gives our kids a chance in life, new clean energy economy that generates the good jobs of the future, meaningful financial reforms that protect consumers, and health reform that prohibits the worst practices of the insurance industry and restores some stability and peace of mind for middle-class families. Now, none of these steps alone will solve all the challenges facing the middle class. Joe understands that, so do I. So do all my members of the Cabinet and our economic team. But hopefully some of these steps will reestablish some of the security that's slipped away in recent years. Because in the end, that's how Joe and I measure progress. Not by how the markets are doing, but by how the American people are doing. It's about whether they see some progress in their own lives. So we're going to keep fighting to rebuild our economy so that hard work is once again rewarded, wages and incomes are once again rising, and the middle class is once again growing. And above all, we're going to keep fighting to renew the American dream and keep it alive, not just in our time, but for all time. So again, to our team, and that includes, by the way, the folks over here. Thank you for the great work that you've done. I'm excited about a lot of the proposals that you've come up with. And we expect that we're going to be able to get some of these critical initiatives passed soon so that folks can get some help right away. Thank you very much.